Welcome to the Hyphen Church Podcast, where faith meets the spaces in between. We're here to explore what it means to belong, to grow, and to encounter God in the midst of life's questions and complexities. Whether you're here to listen, reflect, or take a step forward, know that you're in the right place. Let's make space together for what God is doing in us and through us. Now, let's dive into today's message.
Well, here we are in our new series, and we kind of, in our response last week, we kind of tempered what was happening and what we were coming to. Because again, as our response grows, as we learn to be people of God and we learn to be Christians, our response is going to be something that is rooted in the Spirit and as we're walking in the Spirit. And so I want to take the next 7 weeks. That'll take us all the way up to November 30th, the first Sunday of Advent. But I want to take this time to walk us through how we can be fruitful living, how we can make a living being fruitful human beings. And in some ways, it's easier than you think, and in some ways, it's harder than you think. And a lot of times, we work at the wrong thing, or we think that it's fruits of the Spirit, and we want to pick and choose which one of those fruits that we want today, when the Bible uses the singular term. It's fruit of the Spirit. And so that's found in Galatians 5 that Paul's writing to the church in Galatia. And so I want us to start there this week as we have a kind of introduction to what we want to expect from a life that is lived in the Spirit rather than a life that's lived in the flesh. So Galatians 5, 16 through 26 is what we will read this morning. And it'll be kind of the text that we go back to throughout this series. So Paul writes this to the church. Live by the Spirit, I say, and do not gratify the desires of the flesh. For what the flesh desires is opposite to the Spirit. And what the Spirit desires is opposed to the flesh. For these are opposed to each other to prevent you from doing what you want. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not subject to the law. Now, the works of the flesh are obvious. Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry, sorcery, enmities, strife, jealousy, anger, quarrels, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these. I'm warning you, as I warned you before, those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. By contrast, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. There is no law against such things. And those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live by the Spirit, let us also be guided by the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, competing against one another, envying one another. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you for opening your word. Thank you for the word from Paul this morning. And help us not to find a way that we can use it in our lives, but help us to see you in it. Illuminate this in our lives so that the Spirit comes and dwells with us so that we know you and can seek you better. In your Son, we pray. Amen. So Paul writes this, and there is a great idea, a great sense of how we as people can see the difference. Now, we don't have a time, and maybe another day in another sermon series, if you want me to, I will walk you through the fruits of the flesh. If you want to, we can do that. But we don't have the space, we don't have the time, and frankly, I really don't want to write down the fruits of the flesh. So those are that's the list that we have. And so what Paul was talking about was pretty clear. In the fact that the things that we want to do, we never get to do because we're living with sin in our hearts. And we see the world in sort of a fogginess. And so the idea is that Paul is saying, here are all these things that you see the Gentiles doing and really the pagans doing, because he's writing to a group of Gentiles here who are believers. Here's what you see the pagans doing. Theirs is the way of the world. Theirs is the way of the flesh. And if you have truly seen people, if you're truly seeking out people who are living in the Spirit, who are working in the same direction that you're working, you're going to see some of these other things. Love, peace, patience, kindness, all of those things. And so we are being formed every single day, whether we are being formed by the flesh or whether we are being formed by the Spirit. And Paul says, walk by the Spirit. In fact, he says that twice, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. He is not saying this, that if you walk by the Spirit, you will no longer have desires of the flesh. He's not saying that. And a lot of times in Christianity, we're expected to get to that spot, right? Where I become a Christian and all the ways of the world just, they just sink away. And I work on it every single day and I just desire the world less and less. And that's not what Paul is saying. He's saying if you walk by the Spirit, then you will not have the power to gratify those desires of the flesh when they show up. The word Paul uses for walk is peripateia, which is to literally go about or to make your way or to keep in step. Peri, where we get parallel lines. So to walk alongside, like walking in rhythm with a companion. The Christian life isn't static. It is a movement from one place to the next. And Paul is saying, walk alongside the Spirit. Don't walk alongside the flesh. Don't walk alongside the world, but walk alongside the Spirit. It carries the idea of everyday movement, ordinary, consistent, embodied. That's what we're looking for. That phrase, walk by the Spirit, is the controlling idea for everything that follows. It's not a single decision. It's a lifestyle, a pace, a rhythm, a relationship with somebody. And a lot of times in the church, especially in churches that are not of like a charismatic background, but a lot of times what we get trapped in is Jesus, come and help me. Jesus, come and walk with me. God the Father, come and walk with me. When really, God has called us to dwell with the Spirit. Paul is writing, dwell with the Spirit. Jesus himself said, I will send you an advocate. That word advocate starts with the same word in Greek, para, alongside. I have to go away so that the advocate will come and help you. He's saying, let every step of your life, every thought, reaction, and interaction move in a rhythm with the Spirit of God. There is this tension, though, that we hold. There is this struggle beneath the surface. And he describes the conflict. They are opposed to each other. The spirit of flesh, the spirit of God. They are opposed to keep you from doing what you want to do. And the truth is we live in this tension every single day. Two impulses pull at us. One rooted in self. The flesh wants to control and comfort and the immediacy of what's going on. They want to take pleasure in the things around them. They want more and they want to be selfish and lazy. And there's one rooted in surrender, the Spirit, which calls us to trust and to love and to patience and joy and peace. The word flesh here doesn't mean the human body. It means the self apart from God. The part of us that resists surrender. The flesh says, I will do it my way. And the Spirit says, let me lead. Think of it this way. Think of it as walking along someone who knows the terrain. Like there's a really skilled backpacker that's going with you. And like you're just trying this thing out and you're not very good at it yet. And you want to get better and better, but you don't know the terrain. And if you've ever watched a documentary about climbing Everest, you know that very few people do it by themselves. There have been a few solo ascents, but what do? They hire the people from Nepal to go up with them. They hire those guides to go up with them. And so if you fall behind, they know the way. And if you get into a crevice, they know the way. And they know how to get over this ice bridge. And they know all of the tricks of the terrain. And so Paul's point here is the Spirit is that guide. The Spirit is the one that sets the pace and knows where the ground is rocky and knows where there's this hole that you can fall into. And so the closer that we live to the Spirit, the more that we are going to stay in step with the Spirit. And the truth is, both are always pulling. Every decision, every reaction, every moment of anxiety or anger or love is shaped by one of these two forces. Remember last week we said that this thing will form you, and it depends on your relationship with Christ and how it's going to form you. You get a young Christian and they say, I don't know whether I'm a Christian or not. I'm battling all the time. And that's it. That's the whole thing. That's the definition of being a Christian. That is the battle. It's getting up and keeping on going. It's the walking. It's the effort. It's not that you become a Christian and then suddenly all this fruits starts blossoming even if you do nothing. It's the continual work. It's the continual walk in the direction of the Spirit. It's like you've got these two little raccoons that are fighting inside you, you know? And one of them is flesh and one of them is spirit, and they're constantly just fighting over all that garbage that comes in. Which one wins? The one wins the one that you feed. So if you continue to feed the Spirit, if you continue to dwell in the Word and dwell with Christ's people, that Spirit will live. But if you start to feed the flesh and you dwell with the people of the world and you want to be like them, those desires will win. This isn't about guilt, though. This is about guidance. This isn't about a step to how do I become more fruitful. This is not what this is. This is not another program in your life. This is not another Christianity thing that I just have to do. This is about guidance. The Spirit doesn't shame us when we stumble. He reaches out and says, let's try again. Maybe for you, this week has felt chaotic. Maybe your inner world has felt like there's two competing songs, anxiety and faith, despair and hope, noise and stillness. And you're not failing because of the tension. The tension means you are alive in Christ. Dead things don't struggle. Living things wrestle. Some of us live as though the Christian life is a tightrope, one wrong step, and just God is done with us. Like if I can just put up these guardrails against my life, then maybe I will be able to be fine. But the Spirit doesn't work that way. The Spirit isn't there with a clipboard saying, you've done these things, you are condemned, you are judged. The Spirit meets us with compassion. These are the fruit of the Spirit. Paul's next point is that who we follow determines what kind of freedom we experience, though, because we were meant for freedom. And now we're trying to think of what that means. So if we're living in the fruit of the Spirit, how can we be free? How can we be a part of this life? How can we be, as people have said? The flesh does promise freedom. That's part of its draw, right? We want to be free. We see those people out there sinning and they're like, wow, they look like they're having a great time. They look like they're having so much fun. But it does deliver bondage. It does deliver chains to us. Paul continues by naming what happens when we let the flesh, that self-centered, self-protective part of us, lead the way. He calls them works of the flesh. And when we read that whole list of works of the flesh, it's easy to distance ourselves, right? It's easy to think those are them people. Those are the other people doing those things, and they're not us. But Paul's not talking about a category of people. He's not saying, look at all those people doing those things. He's saying, notice that they have a spirit of, or a desires of the flesh in them. He's talking about a condition of the human heart that anyone can fall into, that anyone can open up and say, you know what? I've decided that I know better than the Spirit. I've decided that I can go off and do these things and I won't be harmed. And this is not about me because I'm living with God and there is forgiveness there. And so I'll just get on the hamster wheel and I'll start sinning and then I'll have forgiveness and then I'll just continue my life in that way. And Paul's like, we're done with this. We're done with the desires of the flesh because we want to have desires of the Spirit. These are not random sins. They are symptoms of a disconnected people. These are symptoms of people that are not desiring after the Spirit. So the flesh's definition of freedom is simple. I can do whatever I want to do at any time. That sounds liberating, doesn't it? No boundaries, no interference, no restraint of any kind. But that kind of freedom always ends up enslaving us to something else. Our desires become our masters. Our appetite drives our choices. Our fear dictates our reaction. It's like you saying, I'm free to drive anywhere I want to, while ignoring guardrails and ignoring speed limits and stop signs. It doesn't make you free. It makes you reckless. And so Paul contrasts works of the flesh with fruit of the Spirit. Work is forced, fruit is formed. One drains you, the other grows in you. The flesh demands performance, and the Spirit will produce transformation. And I think the best way that I can illustrate this is with dogs. Now, I'm not a dog person, but there are dog people in this room, all right? So this is just my observation of dogs in general, all right? There are four types of dogs from what I can see. There's one who's named Spike, who kind of stays on the leash at all times, and he pulls against his owner, and he doesn't really know how to behave. That's Spike. And then there's Buster, who has kind of the same energy, but he's never on a leash. So he just runs around and does whatever he wants to do. And then there's Max, who's off his leash, but he stays right with his master. All right, he's learned to listen to his master's voice. And then there's Benji, who's my neighbor's dog, and he gets carried everywhere. All right? So there's four kinds of dogs. Now, let's break this down and figure out where we're working in this illustration. So Spike, he's the one that stays on the leash, pulls against his owner. This is religion. This is what religion does for us. We smell that rabbit. We see that garden we want to dig up. And we can't stop ourselves, so we have to put up guardrails. We have to be on the leash at all times, or else we're going to break away. And then we think to ourselves, well, you know what? I've been a good dog this week. Spike's been a good dog. He hasn't bitten anyone. He hasn't pooed in the neighbor's yard. He hasn't dug up the garden or anything like that. He's been good, hasn't he? But that's religion holding us back. That's religion saying you haven't been reformed at all. You still need these laws. You still need all of these things to hold you back. Whereas Max is off the leash and he's standing right there next to his owner. And he's reminded of temptation. He still sees the rabbit. He still wants to dig in the garden. And he might even twitch a little bit. But his master says, Max, remember who you are. Max, remember whose you are. And Max will sit back down. And he'll be tempted, and there'll be temptation. But he has reminded himself that he is the master's dog, and so he comes right back to his side. So it's not that there isn't a battle in him. It's not that he doesn't smell the rabbit. It's just that he knows whose he is. That is freedom in Christ. Now, Buster, that's just a non-Christian who feels like I can just go and run and do whatever I want to. I can bite the neighbor. I can dig up the garden. I can do all these things. And that's truly freedom. That's not freedom. That's the illusion of freedom. That's recklessness. And then poor Benji. This is the let go and let God Christian. Now, there's a lot of truth in that phrase, but there's also a lot of error in that phrase. In other words, I'm just going to sit back, and I'm just not going to do anything in my life, and I'm not going to serve anyone, and the Lord is just going to carry me through. And Christianity is kind of like a little soft pillow, that if I have to work too hard, that I don't want to work for it. And that's just not Christian either. And so Paul wants the Galatians and us to see that the Spirit doesn't limit your life. The Spirit liberates it. It gives you the chance to truly be free because you're not being held back by religion and you're not running around reckless and you're not being carried through life by someone else. You are living your life as you're meant to be. And so when you see temptation, when those desires of the flesh show up, all of a sudden we can stop. We put the brakes on that because we hear the master's voice in our ear. Settle down. We got this. We've been here before. Sit right there. Freedom isn't doing whatever you want. It's finally being free to do what's good and right and life-giving. We have places where we've believed the illusion, where we've mistaken indulgence for freedom and autonomy for peace, and yet the Spirit doesn't condemn us. He invites us back to the deeper truth. Maybe you have felt it as well, that exhaustion that comes from running your own life, the fatigue of trying to keep it all together, the control that you need over everything, only to find that your freedom has become a kind of slavery to work, to imagine, to your opinion, to your excess. And the Spirit whispers, you do not have to live that way anymore. If you are led by the Spirit, you are no longer under the law. And so you see, the flesh works quickly. It produces instant results, instant gratification, but empty soil. And so the Spirit works slowly, but he grows what lasts. The flesh shouts and the Spirit whispers. The flesh consumes, but the Spirit cultivates. That's why Paul turns to the metaphor of fruit, because unlike works of the flesh, the fruit of the Spirit isn't manufactured. And here's the freedom in that. Because again, this is not another self-help program. These are not steps to take to say, how can I start to love better? This is not manufactured fruit. It's cultivated over time. And that's where we discover that true transformation, real freedom, Spirit-formed transformation is slow work, but it is holy work. So the Spirit grows fruit. It's not instant. It's organic. It's deep in the soil of surrendered lives. But fruit doesn't appear overnight. Just like the parable we read last week, that 3 years that fruit tree, that fig tree was standing there. Give it one more year. I will cultivate the soil. I will make it happen. You can't rush it, though. You can't sit there thinking, how can I become more loving? How can I have more joy? How can I have more peace and patience? How can I be kinder and gentler? How can I have more generosity and self-control? But it's not a matter of production. It's not a matter of doing something to get more. It's about partnership. You don't wake up one day and decide, today I'm going to be joyful. And sometimes we have to do that to fake it, right? We have to wake up and put a smile on our face, and we have to fake it. And we have to say, you know what, inside I'm struggling with so much, but God has called me to be joyful. So I need to do that. Works of the flesh show themselves again because it's not about that. It's not producing something in us. It's about how can I get more of Christ? How can I live closer to the Spirit who is cultivating in me a life of love and joy and patience? Peace doesn't come from pushing, it comes from abiding. Joy isn't forced, it's formed in us and through us and around us. Fruit is quiet. Have you ever noticed this? Maybe you don't even care. But have you heard an apple tree start to grow? That isn't a sound that exists in nature. You never hear it groan and say, this is the season, I'm going to do better. It doesn't creak under the weight. It just stays rooted and fruit comes from it. Boy, that is helpful, isn't it? That I don't have to wake up every morning and think, today's my chance. This is it. I'm going to show the world how generous I am. We stay rooted. We stay in the Spirit. And all of a sudden, those things start to form naturally. They start to occur, not out of some guidance, not out of some guideline, not out of some leash that we have to hold ourselves tethered to. But they happen naturally. In our world, we're trained to measure everything: attendance, success, influence, outcomes. But the Spirit measures growth by, here it is, faithfulness. That's why we just came through an 8-week series on faithfulness, because in order to do the fruit of the Spirit, in order to be rooted in the Spirit, we need to understand that it's not more of something, it's just faith. It's not reaching a new goal. It's not putting in a new program in our life. It's not becoming a better disciple of Christ. It's faith. That's the whole ball game right there. It's faithfulness. Not speed or size or program. It's faithfulness. If all you did this week was stay connected to Christ, you've done it. You've found it. You have succeeded in what Paul is talking about. And the second that we don't stay connected, the second that we go off the leash and we run and we dig up the garden, because man, just so much fun. I love doing that. We haven't stayed connected to what Paul is talking about. And so he said at the beginning, Paul calls it fruit, not fruits, plural. He's not describing 9 separate virtues to check off. He's describing one unified life, the character of Christ being formed in you by the Spirit. And this is crucial because it shifts us from trying to act like Jesus, which is where a lot of nominal and modern day discipleship programs put us. A lot of small groups will put us into a place where we want to say, how do we start to act like Jesus? But this church here, what we're trying to do in community is not to get us to act like Jesus, but to abide in Jesus. Because when we try and act like Jesus, we think we have to check off all of these things on our bookmarker. We have to say, I did love today. I did joy today. I did peace. I did not do patience. That one I cannot do. But I did most of the other ones. And so I'm starting to act like Jesus. And that makes me happy because I didn't dig up anyone's garden this week. But notice I still have the leash on my collar. When we stop trying to act like Jesus and we start trying to abide with Jesus, that's where we truly can live. That's where we truly understand how this freedom thing works. It's not imitation, it's participation. When you graft a branch from one tree onto another, that branch takes the life of its new root. And over time, it begins to bear fruit of the tree it's been joined to. Not because it tries harder, but because it's connected. It's now in the root system of that tree. And that's what life in the Spirit is like. Your soul grafted into Christ's life. And I know you because I know me. And we want instant results. We want instant maturity. And God is asking us for deep formation. It takes time because roots have to grow. Think of bamboo. For its first several years, bamboo barely grows above the ground. Because all it's trying to do is expand its root system down. But boy, oh boy, when it starts to grow, it will grow quickly. Several feet in a week, in fact. That's how the Spirit works. Years of invisible faithfulness, and all of a sudden, visible fruit starts to come up. You might be in that root season now. You don't see results yet, but you are not trying hard enough, is what you say to yourself. If only I could try harder, if only I could be a better disciple. And that's just missing the point. That if you don't see fruit now, it's because your rootedness is still working on you. Remain in the Spirit. And so let's linger on this fruit for a moment, because these are what we're going to be talking about for the next several weeks. These are not random virtues, by the way. They are all relational. They are all relational. I can't practice any of these fruit by myself. I can't. And so the first thing we have to notice about fruit of the Spirit is that they are all relational. They're all outward pointing. Love, the soil from which everything grows. And we're going to talk about that next week. Joy, delight that refuses to depend on circumstances. Peace, the calm center that comes from trusting God's presence. Patience, endurance when the world moves faster than our healing. Kindness, the instinct to give grace before judgment. Goodness, integrity that holds firm even when no one sees. Faithfulness, staying steady when others drift. Gentleness, strength restrained for the sake of love. And self-control, that guiding factor over them all. The freedom to say no to lesser things because you've already said yes to God. There is the slow work of God. Pierre de Chardin once wrote, "Above all, trust in the slow work of God." Paul's message isn't try harder, it's stay rooted in the Spirit. Let the Spirit do the cultivating. Let Him tend the soil, prune the branches, water what is dry, because fruit is not evidence of effort, it is evidence of connection.